the Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
For me, footwork has been something that's got me out of trouble on more than one occasion on and off the pitch, so I'll go with that one.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
Malloy with you. We've a great show lined up. Damien Delaney with us across the football show between 9 and 10. Monday Night Rugby with Gerry Thornley and Matt Williams after 8. Big game for Ireland on Thursday. World Cup qualifiers start with Sweden this week. We'll hear from Vera Powell speaking to the media this afternoon. Meanwhile, Rory McIlroy won his 20th PGA Tour title last night. Landmark achievement. Very few in history trump his tally of majors and PGA Tour titles. And this in the midst of a bad year for McIlroy. He's won twice on the PGA Tour. 53106 is the text number. We are at Off the Ball on Twitter. We'll be chatting to Dermot Gleese about that around 7:30 or so. Richie McCormack, hello to you.
Young Joe, how are you?
I am very well. Mr. Owen Sheehan on the News Round. Exciting time zone.
Evening, Joe. Evening, Richie.
I said exciting time zone.
Buzzing for this.
Yes. Who's more excited, us or you? I think, I mean, it's hard to know.
I mean, Rory McIlroy's back, Joe. I mean, who cannot be excited? Me and Richie are absolutely buzzing for 3 hours of Rory talk.
Well, listen, Dermot Gleese on the way. I won't drone on about Rory, but just one statistic, because the man breaks my heart on a weekly basis now. That's Rory, not Richie, I'm talking about here. The man breaks my heart on a weekly basis. And much of Golf Weekly, available on Patreon, is myself and Peter Laurie and Nathan and Fionn. I would say, bemoaning Rory, but deep down it's more upset than anger. And then he comes along, even in this terrible year, and wins twice on the PGA Tour. And so what that win does is moves him to 20 PGA Tour wins, and he has the four majors. Obviously, it's been, drought for the last 7 years and counting. But all the same, Rory McIlroy is now just the sixth player since 1934, which was the year of the first Masters. So since golf, as we know it, really was born. Just the sixth player in history to win 20 PGA Tour events, including four majors, before the age of 33. So McIlroy joins a list which goes as follows. Byron Nelson, Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, Tom Watson, Tiger Woods, and now Rory. So like, he keeps doing things which put him in unbelievably exclusive company, like still just 32. So Dermot Gleese will talk to you about that.
He does them at things like the CJ Cup, for which, you know, Joe Public's care factor might necessarily be peaked.
There is that. Now, to be fair, it was on far too easy a course by major standards, but
I was 25 under, wasn't it, what that won it?
Like, yes.
It was insane. I was watching the scores roll in on Thursday and Friday on the bulletins, and I was like, well, this is taking the pace a little bit.
But what mitigates against that is, of the world's top 30, 24 players were there. So, yes, it's a certain type of golf where you have to go out and shoot really low, and traditionally majors might be stiffer tests. But he was against 24 of the world's top 30 there, and he blitzes them. Like, he held off Colin Morikawa, the Open champion, and resurgent Ricky Fowler. So he wasn't just beating chumps out there, to be fair. So it's interesting. He was saying himself afterwards that on the Saturday evening of the Ryder Cup, he thought he was done with golf for the year. And then after the Sunday, when he obviously went out and won his singles, he said, OK, I'll go to Vegas and see if I can do something and build on the breakthrough. Yeah, he said there was a lot of reflection last couple of weeks. This is what I need to do. I need to play golf. I need to simplify it. I need to just be me. I think for the last few months, I was trying to maybe be someone else to try and get better. So that's where Rory is. Dermot Gleese on the way at 7:30 will be interesting. Like, he is own from the island of Ireland, possibly the most underappreciated sports star we've ever produced. I think history will be very kind to him.
Definitely. I think what's really interesting there as well is the work ethic that McIlroy has for constant improvement. Maybe in time it'll come out in the wash that actually his constant adaptation to the modern game may have actually held him back in some regards, especially over the last 5 or 6 years. But the other way to look at it is that you put him in that list of only six players under the age of 33 who've got to 20 PGA Tour wins, that really his ceiling is much higher than a lot of those six because of the way technology has developed, the level of innovation he's bringing to the game as well. Now, of course, the counterpoint to that is that the PGA Tour is as competitive as it's ever been at this point, especially because of the US collegiate system. But this sort of era where we had a little tinge of disappointment around Rory McIlroy about this youth, where there were sort of Tiger comparisons coming up, I'm not sure I'd be quite confident about where his 30s are going to take him over the next 7-8 years for sure. Because if he manages to crack this and get a more consistent version of the McIlroy he wants to be, as he says, you're going to have more than 2 wins a year for sure. You just got to hope this happens in April rather than February and October.
He's at a fascinating juncture. Like, he's always been an interesting sports person, but now, as you said, it's all about his 30s, should be his peak years. He's either going to kick on and win a couple of more majors, like suddenly 3 more majors, if that's not inconceivable, puts him level with Arnold Palmer, absolute legend of the game. Or he doesn't get over the line for whatever reason, and suddenly he's got this career whereby he burned so brightly, so young, won 4 majors in no time. It was Tiger-esque. And then what happened? You know, so it's that's a big difference there. And we're kind of watching it unfold in real time. So Dermot Cullis with his 7:30. Meanwhile, on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is, I would think, ahead of Atalanta Wednesday and Liverpool on Sunday, and they don't get much easier after that, the games. I would think he's teetering. Do we say teetering now at the moment?
I think that's fair enough. I think Manchester City in that run of fixtures as well that you alluded to there. But what tends to happen with Solskjaer when a rough run of fixtures comes up on the back of a few bad results? He tends to pull something out of the hat. This team tends to pull something out, and it's because he has had teams with absolute quality from the middle of the sticks right the way up to the attack, right the way through his entire reign at Manchester United. And these players will surely get a tune out of themselves at some point over the next couple of weeks, where we will rush away from that teetering position, and maybe Manchester United will as well. I see that there's protest planned for Old Trafford on Sunday. Is that Solskjaer protest? Is that Glazer protest? To what extent are people unhappy with him as opposed to the ownership? And to what extent is it right for all the anger to be not taken out in Solskjaer at this point from a fan base's perspective? I'm not sure, because it feels like Groundhog Day every single time we have this conversation. It does feel a little bit more severe now, especially when you've got Brendan Rodgers coming out on Saturday evening basically saying, this is how we targeted you, and it was pretty simple once we managed to figure out that your attack was not going to press us.
Yeah, well, Damien Delaney is on the football show later on, and I know we talk about United's midfield all the time. He's putting a lot of the blame on Harry Maguire, who's just continually dropping too deep, and so everything is stretched. Midfielders turn around, but to be fair, he certainly wasn't fit. And like,
on a general point, I appreciate that. Yeah, it's like that there, but that's a manager thing. Like, that, surely, if Damien Delaney, with the greatest respect to Damien's career in football analysis,
you want to tread unbelievably carefully right now, because we will cut you off.
You know where I'm going here. The point is that if people from the outside are able to spot these things, and they do seem glaringly obvious, a lot of them, the problems at Manchester United, their shapelessness in midfield, their, you know, what to do with when Cristiano Ronaldo is your main man, but you're not exactly able to feed him, et cetera, like, they're manifold, these problems. We can all see them. How Ole Gunnar Solskjaer hasn't seen them or hasn't addressed them is becoming increasingly more the issue at Manchester United, and his ability, if there is one, to address these issues is like it's under more than scrutiny now at this stage. I think it's all agreed that it isn't there. They're Manchester United fans, clearly don't want him in charge of the club. But the question is then after that, who did they get? Because it's a point that's been raised on the show numerous times before. They haven't exactly gotten the most expensive items from the shopping list when getting a manager the last 4 occasions, really, since Ferguson left. So who do they go for? And because Conte is not going to play the type of football of the candidates that are out there that United fans want to see, essentially. And there's a massive question mark over Zinedine Zidane, despite his record at Real Madrid, because he hasn't done anywhere else. So, like, who's to say whatever is next is actually going to be successful? That club is not in a good way.
No, these are valid points. He was saying with Maguire, generally, it's just that he's no pace, so he drops deep and midfielders turn around and see huge amounts of space in behind them. And it's tricky because Maguire is protecting himself, and Premier League pace will catch him out if he presses up too high. So you got a lot of root problems there. Pogba's a problem, Ronaldo's a problem in certain respects, and it's not an easy job to figure things out at the moment. One last point before we kick off the news round. Owen, did I see a picture of you chatting to Vera Pau today? Is that coming up tomorrow?
Yeah. Out at the press conference earlier on as the Republic of Ireland, I guess, launched their new campaign. It is a World Cup qualification campaign, which begins on Thursday night. We're going to have the game on the show. It is Ireland against Sweden. One hell of an opener. Of course, it was due to be Georgia, but that game didn't go ahead. So Sweden is the opener for Ireland in this World Cup qualification campaign. I think we'll all remember the game against Ukraine and how disappointing that was, the 1-0 defeat. And just thinking to ourselves, right, okay, the next campaign, this is a big one. This is a really significant campaign for Vera Powell. And it's here. It's this Thursday. Herself and Katie McCabe were up for media today. And I'm sure we're going to hear plenty of it in the news round and throughout the show.
Okay, very good. We should kick off the news round. There's a lot going on. It is, as ever, with thanks to Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. So, Richie, Michael Reynolds, people may not be aware who Michael Reynolds is. He's a Leinster GAA secretary. And he was on with Owen and Jer this morning and was fairly blunt about things and gave his opinions on things. It's a great interview. People should watch it back. It's very lively. And Tom Parsons has reacted.
He has indeed. The GPA CEO, Tom Parsons, describing the Leinster GAA Secretary's views on Proposal B facing Special Congress this Saturday as not acceptable. Michael Reynolds this morning voices opposition to the league as championship format. Delegates are going to vote on the proposed changes to the Football Championship at Special Congress on Saturday. And speaking on this morning's OTBAM, Reynolds was firmly opposed to Proposal B.
Matt, why can't that work as the provincial championship being the curtain raiser to the entire year?
No, it won't. Absolutely not.
Why not?
Well, who would play at that time of year into a championship and be preparing for another championship literally later on? First of all, the very fact that we're all this morning discussing the World Championship, Sigerson of reference. What about under 20 football? That at least one manager packed it in last year over Hassel, right? That's 2 points. Now, the third point I would make is the four provincial finals are scheduled to play around the 2nd of April with nothing at stake. And yet,
a trophy at stake, medals and trophies. That's what.
Live in the real world, lads. Live in the real world.
Michael, right? players want trophies and medals. We're not in any way being facetious here. I am not being facetious. I firmly believe that people enter competitions, players enter competitions to try and win trophies and medals. They get hats and they celebrate and they go, and that's the reality of all the sports that we've ever seen.
So you are equating the O'Byrne Cup then with the Leinster Championship?
I mean, no one's saying it's going to be the O'Byrne Cup. It's the same trophy. It's still going to be the same trophy that Kildare won in 2000. I remember a massive crowd celebrating an O'Byrne Cup. It won't actually be the same trophy.
Sorry, it's trophy competition. When Kildare last won the Leinster Championship, they went on to an All-Ireland. So it's not the same.
It's the same trophy. You win the same trophy, you get a medal. And actually, I do remember an O'Byrne Cup triumph that Kildare celebrated wildly because we thought that it was a precursor to something better.
Yeah, well, you do all those, don't you?
Michael, can I just... We're dreamers, Michael.
I have connections in the tie, so don't say too much.
There you are, Michael Reynolds, Leinster GAA Secretary. Where do I join his fan club? That's what we need. A bit of straight talking for you boys in the morning, Owen Sheehan. He saw you coming a long way and he was ready.
Oh, he was. He was armed. He knew who he was talking to. The head of the Kildare Mafia was coming his way. And I mean, he is the third of the provincial council heads, really, to come out and firmly oppose Proposal B, which is obviously the only one worth talking about ahead of this Saturday special Congress. We're yet to hear, as far as I'm aware, from Connacht, but we've had Kieran Leddy from Munster and Brian McAvoy from Ulster. Brian McAvoy and Michael Reynolds have both been pretty blunt in their assessment. They really don't see any way how this can actually work and how this can actually benefit the current structures, whereas Leddy and Munster actually kind of feels like he is open to some sort of manoeuvre on this if the finances are a little bit more baked in and look better from the outset, I think is his view. So the provincial councils aren't all on the Michael Reynolds level of opposition to this. Himself and Brian McAvoy certainly the two most vociferous opponents and the most blunt opponents, I think it's fair to say, of Proposal B.
What's your sense of all this now? Sorry, Richie. I just quickly want to get on the sense because I know you boys are doing a lot of work on this in the mornings. I would say there was a real flurry of excitement when this was all proposed initially. Media very on board with Proposal B. GPA suddenly out with Proposal B. GAA headquarters staying quiet and continuing to stay quiet. And now I think, I'd say over the last 5, 6, 7 days, I would say a growing, more vociferous opposition to plan B going through here? I'm increasingly suspecting proposal B does not get the 60%. What are you thinking?
Yeah, that would be my gut feeling as well. And do you know what? I mean, fair play to everybody who's coming out in real opposition to proposal B, like we just heard there. But I actually don't think that will be the reason why this does not pass. I actually think there are a lot of people out there who say proposal B is a lot better than the status quo, but it's not perfect. Therefore, I am not going to vote for proposal B. And I mean, I think that kind of misses how GAA actually works and how the GAA changes and how change happens to the organization. I think to hope for perfection and for people to be throwing out their favorite championship structures this week, it feels like a very futile exercise. It's going to completely distract from the task at hand, which is, do you want the status quo or do you want something much better, which is proposal B? And for that reason, I fear that the distraction has already happened and it's a little bit too late, and it might get 50%, but it will struggle to get 60.
You were coming in, Rich.
Yeah, on Michael Reynolds' interview, because it does cover a lot of ground, apart from him being, I would say, unnecessarily blunt at times this morning. But one issue he did raise, which I think is worth exploring, is that he said that the Leinster Council and the other provincial councils would have say-so over how their championships are formatted. So he did raise the issue of perhaps a Leinster championship whereby the top four seeds or the top four finishers in the league or whoever they want to deal it out would get automatic buys to quarterfinals, and then the rest would be split into one or two groups in a round robin to essentially guarantee them all two or three games and then progress to a quarterfinal, which I think is probably the way that this is going to go, because I don't think you need to know which way the wind is blowing to know that we're going to end up with the status quo, I think, on Saturday evening. But there being a willingness among the provincial councils to actually change how their championships on the football bases are run, that seems to be the way forward, and to give teams a bit more of a chance of playing games, guaranteeing them a minimum number of games going into each championship. And I think the format that Mick Reynolds outlined this morning for Leinster is probably going to be the most workable in the interim.
Okay. Well, if nothing else, this whole saga will hopefully herald the beginning of the Mick Reynolds bi-weekly GA update on OTBAM, and I know we'll all look forward to that. James Horan was on Midwest, Richie. He also has concerns with Proposal B, and you know, in fairness, does, James, yeah, James Horan is a GA man of serious substance as well, so I mean, we've got to listen to all opinions, don't you?
First of all, he dismissed talk of a row among his backroom team following that All-Ireland final defeat just last month, but also he gave his view on Proposal B in that wide-ranging interview with Midwest this morning.
I think Proposal B is solid, but there's flaws in it. You know, you can have guys battering away in Division 1 that won't get a crack at, you know, that a couple of them won't get a crack at an All-Ireland final. The winners of Division 4 or Division 3 will. So, even though it's a much different standard or level. So, I'm not sure it's the right proposal. That's just my take on it. If things were left as is, I'd be okay with that. If there's a slight tweak, I'd be okay with that too. But I'm not sure Proposal B, in my opinion, is exactly... I don't think we should rush into it.
There we are. So it does seem as if the wind is blowing that way, not rushing into it at the moment. Special Congress this Saturday. Tommy Welch then?
Yeah, he's announced his retirement from inter-county football. He returned to the Kerry panel in 2015 after a spell in the AFL, first with St Kilda and then the Sydney Swans. Welsh won an All-Ireland medal in 2009 and he was part of the Kingdom team beaten in the final a decade later by Dublin.
We have live football this evening.
We do indeed. There's 5 minutes played at Tallaght Stadium in tonight's SSE or Tristy Premier Division Dublin derby. It's still Shamrock Rovers 0, Bohemians 0. The visitors without Georgie Kelly tonight, Promise Amacherry leading the line for them. Rovers need just 7 more points from the remaining 6 games to retain the title, and Bowes hoping to deprive them of at least 3 of those tonight. Patrick Vieira returns to Arsenal for the first time as a manager tonight. The former Gunners midfielder takes his Crystal Palace team to the Emirates in the Premier League, and kickoff there is at 8 p.m.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on that game. I mean, it was an interesting Premier League weekend, full stop. On the Saudi takeover at Newcastle was very much, I think, the story of yesterday and the reality of the new era, and then obviously promptly beaten by Spurs and their second from bottom, but they'll quickly turn that around. What have you made of, you know, every aspect of it, I suppose, from, well, the takeover and the $320 billion, which is going to be interesting, and how quickly they can get up to a certain standard will be very interesting to media reaction and fans' reaction. Like, I didn't get to see any of the coverage yesterday. I'm told Jamie Redknapp interviewed the owners, all this kind of stuff was going on.
Yeah, the coverage was bonkers yesterday. But even not so much the coverage, but the actual pageantry of the event. I'm not quite sure we've actually fetishized the ownership of football to quite the level it's happened in Newcastle ever. I think this is on a level quite above what we've seen in Manchester City and Paris Saint-Germain, that this is a real sense of salvation for the Newcastle people from their perspective, I mean. And so the response was absolutely glorious yesterday to their new owners when the cameras walk up the steps and get a good look at them, and they're on the big screen and everybody's singing their names. Like, this is almost like a homecoming of sorts. And there was something almost like out of Gladiator when the game did break out, where they had their thumb up when Steve Bruce and his side went 1-0 up, and then the thumb was firmly placed downwards when they had started to concede a couple of goals and looked like they were losing the game, where you could tell from the expression of the ownership group that this guy's not going to be in charge for very long. And I know he's going to get a massive payout if he does get sacked in the next little while, but you are thinking to yourself, poor Steve Bruce. And I mean, you should have limited sympathy for somebody who's going to get over £9 million in terms of their contract being ended. But you're still feeling a little bit of sympathy for him, just caught in the middle of all this and this sort of referendum that seemed to erupt at St. James's Park around his team yesterday.
It's quite interesting watching former footballers as pundits trying to grapple with what's going on. And I think we're having more misses than hits, to be honest, really. Like David Ginola, I was in here yesterday, so I didn't really get to see it. But towards the end, David Ginola was talking about how, you know, there are questions to be asked of the ownership, and we'll just have to let due process take its course and, you know, we'll see what the ultimate verdict is. I don't know what he's talking about. He's talking about Jamal Khashoggi there. I don't know. But I think the verdict on Saudi Arabia's human rights record is in. Do you know? This was like Ginola talking as if it was some isolated incident. Yeah. And we have to wait and let due process take its course. And then Alan Shearer was on Match of the Day. And it just, look, I'm sure this happens in Match of the Day all the time. I thought it was fairly obviously rehearsed, really, where they do the initial, well, it's great for football, and then it's, and what about the concerns? And Alan Shearer saying, well, look, it's right that questions are being asked, and people should keep asking the questions, and actually, you know, maybe it's good that they, you know, that if they've taken over, more questions will be asked. Now, again, I thought, well, I think we've a lot of the answers to the questions. You know, I think the verdict is kind of in, so. But it was like this holding pattern effort of, well, let's just, questions need to be asked, was one of the go-to kick for touches that I saw anyway.
The Jamie Carragher response really was the Jamie Redknapp response, sorry. The Jamie Redknapp response was very much not a holding pattern. It was, well, people don't care who owns their clubs. It doesn't matter.
He's right about that.
They did when Mike Ashley was in charge.
Well, they don't care about the human rights record. They care about how much they're spending on the team.
But like, that's the thing, like his point, like, and him being mates with one of the Rubin brothers family doesn't help either, in his opinion. So yeah, like it was real soft serve stuff from Sky yesterday. It was really poor. And the situation at Newcastle is hilarious because they're probably going to get relegated. Like, who are they going to get in as manager? Like, when they do sack Bruce, like, who's going to like want to go in there? People are presuming that once they go into the transfer market in January that they're buying, you know, Erling Haaland and Kylian Mbappe and Sergio Ramos. They're not. They won't be able to.
No.
They've a limited number of players that they can actually bring in there to add to, like, the world heavyweights like Matty Longstaff and Jamal Lascelles and Kieran Clark and, you know, Joe Linton. Like, this is a team in dire trouble. It isn't going to get better by two or three players coming in January, and isn't going to get better by somebody who's going to be a placeholder manager until they manage to get someone better when they can spend proper money. No, like, there's a shambles years there that's only going to get worse. Yeah.
Be a few years for sure. There will be some dud signings and some Rubinho types. I was curious because in the Sunday Time Zone, Graeme Souness went to town on the takeover and went to town on Saudi Arabia and said, look, cards on the table, I've worked for beIN, but he was saying how, like, compared to Saudi Arabia, their human rights record is championship level and they're top four. Like, he did use the football analogy. It was kind of a surreal way to, he had like an English Football League table of human rights contravention. But he slammed the Premier League, and he said, like, when the Premier League come along with their Rainbow Laces campaign or their various other campaigns, like, just be under no illusions, it's all a complete fraud on their part. So he was very strong on it. So I was kind of thinking, ooh, if Souness is on Sky this afternoon, this could be interesting. So
lack of him, lack of Gary Neville probably speaks volumes as to where Sky stand on the issue.
Yeah. Anyway, I guess it's not going away, that's for sure. It's going to return again and again. Do you want to give us a last story or two, Rich?
Yeah, brilliant day for Curtis Camphor. He joined an elite club as Ireland made a winning start to the T20 World Cup. He became just the third bowler ever to take four wickets in as many bowls in a T20 international. Ireland beat the Netherlands by 6 wickets in Abu Dhabi today and they'll face Sri Lanka on Wednesday. Camphor described his feelings as he prepared for that history-making fourth delivery today.
Yeah, my heart was racing quite high, but I just took a few deep breaths at the top of my run and just tried to make sure that I managed my skills. Obviously, I didn't really, after those that over, I didn't really finish the last over as well as I wanted to. But, you know what, I'm learning, I'm young, I'm just trying to do the best I can.
And Rich, Robbie Brady, good news?
Yeah, he's finally gotten a club. His long search for a new team came to an end this morning, signing with Championship leaders Bournemouth until the end of this season. The Republic of Ireland winger had been a free agent since his release by Burnley at the end of last term. Still scoreless, by the way, at Tallaght Stadium. Shamrock Rovers nil, Bohemians nil.
Very good. Richie, thanks as ever. Talk to you tomorrow.
Nice.
Owen Sheehan, come again soon. Cheers.
Thanks, lads.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.